Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 51. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude.
51, there's only one number 51 in Sharks history. This should be a slam dunk easy one. Dude.
I don't know.
Dude, Brian Campbell.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about him.
Brian Campbell.
Sorry. I was thinking of a real jersey, not a pink jersey.
Series loser, Brian Campbell. Thanks for turning that puck over. Oops, lost the series.
You know who's not going to lose the series? The Red Wings, those bastards. Dude.
I know. I'm tired.
Dude, they're without so many players. I mean, can you imagine the Sharks going in and winning the cup without Thornton, without Boyle? You know, just our role players just jumping in.
Bastards.
It is. It's.
I'm just tired of that crap. Yeah. Tired of it.
I was hoping the curse of Hossa was going to carry over, but it appears not so much, dude.
Well, dude, this week we got an interview with Mark Purdy, who wrote a really interesting article about the Sharks last week, so we asked him about that.
Great. Mark Purdy, columnist for the San Jose Mercury News.
That's right. So we'll be talking to him a little bit later on in the show, but first we're actually going to get to emails, because we got some emails to questions at dudesonhockey.com. We got two emails here.
Two people are still listening, for sure.
Yeah, there's two, both of you. So actually, it's kind of funny, because I think there's a little bit of overlap here, but let me go to Steve first, and he says, can there be any doubt that Wilson will get rid of Cheech and Milan this offseason if for no other reason than the fact that they have escalating salaries over the next few years and the cap is supposed to come down in a couple, with Pav, Seto, and Claude due for raises this summer or next, and the fact that Patty is UFA next year? I feel that Wilson's hands are tied. Is it possible he could get some first-rounders for them come draft day? The system clearly needs to be restocked after trading Bonino with the increasingly imminent promotions of Couture and Patrecki. From Steve. Steve, it's a good question.
It actually kind of ties in with our step today, which is step five, which is evaluating players under current contract and seeing if any of them need to be put on the trade block.
That's right. And I think you've certainly identified two players, Steve, that I think a lot of people are going to point to. One tiny little nitpick, you said escalating salaries over the next few years. Actually, the cap hit stays the same. The cap hit is always the average of the salaries over the length of the contract. So you're right that the Sharks will actually be paying physically more dollars to those players, but in terms of a cap hit, it doesn't affect the cap, their salary cap hit at all. So, but you know, for Milan Mihalik, I think it's like $4.3 million, which is certainly a good chunk of change, and I think Cheech is $3 million. So yeah, it's $7 million. That's a lot of money. That's one marquee player, or at least three decent role players, maybe even more. So, yeah, I think that's pretty good. I think if you read Mark Purdy's article, and you'll hear later on that, you know, doing some stuff at the draft day might be in the cards, Steve. So stay tuned and listen to that interview. The other email we got is from Chris from Boston. And he said, you guys mentioned the need to make our top four defensemen better, but what type of player do you think would help, and who do you think we can get? He mentioned Craig Rive, he mentioned Mark Stahl. He said they seem to have a glut of good young defensemen in New York and a need for scoring wingers. And he also mentioned Kyle McLaren. So Chris said, I want to mention that if Kyle McLaren wants to come back to the Sharks as a sixth or seventh defenseman, we owe it to him to give him a contract. He accepted his assignment to Worcester. And he says it's pronounced Worcester, which, you know, in the California accent that we both sport, that vowel sound just isn't used.
It's Worcester.
It's Worcester.
Worcester.
Yeah. It's not Worcester.
Worcester.
Worcester. Worcester. Anyway. So there's a couple points there. So, dude, maybe we should say what kind of defenseman are we looking for here? And what about Kyle McLaren?
Well, I mean, we talked about Kyle McLaren last week, where as far as I think if Kyle McLaren wanted to come back, might need to be checked for crazy pills. If I was him, I wouldn't come back. I think that, you know, while he, you know, took it like a man, yes, took his assignment, he didn't have a choice. There's no way he could be happy about that.
Sure.
Going down and, you know, going from caviar to spam basically overnight. And, will his injuries prevent him from getting a lucrative, unrestricted free agent deal? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, but there are players, you know, like, you know, if Steve Monador can get an $800,000 one-year contract, Kyle McLaren's going to be able to get that from somebody.
Right.
You know, family situation, we don't know. I mean, maybe he wants to stay on the West Coast. Maybe he will stay here. I just don't see why. I don't see how, unless players are moved off the roster, where he fits in here.
That's right.
I don't think he fits in. Him, having him and Lukáš around.
And Semenov?
No. It's, I mean, that's a lot of guys, right. I mean, so three guys who are kind of basically the same thing. It doesn't make sense to me. So is it impossible he's going to be here? No. But I don't think it's likely. Now, as far as Mark Stahl, I think the Rangers are not going to be moving him unless they're getting... I mean, you hear his name come up when you hear things like LeCavalier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is one of the cornerstones of that franchise. And I don't know if dangling Jonathan Chichu to the Rangers is going to be enough to get a player like that. And I don't know if they have a great young defensive core there. They've given $11.5 million to Roosevelt and Redden, who you could say would have a hard time being in a top four and maybe half the other teams in the league.
Yeah, I think you're right, especially the way Redden played this past year. And I know Roosevelt's taken a lot of heat for he seems to make some deathly mistakes almost every single night.
Good offensive defenseman, good mm-hmm. on the power play, but I think they're going to be looking to add a defenseman, not subtract. And Craig Rivé coming back from Buffalo, there's no way.
But the type of player. So yeah, the question is, what kind of defenseman?
I don't think Rivé is good enough.
I have to agree with that. I mean, Rivé is a good stalwart defenseman, but how is he appreciably different than Marc-Edouard Vlasic? Yes, he fights more. He's more physical than Vlasic. But is he really the guy that you say, you know, I want two lines out in the power play, Boyle, you're on one, and Rivé, you're on the other? That's not going to... No.
No, it doesn't work. Sharks have to do better than that. We're talking about guys. When I think about the type of player, I'm thinking about... I mean, I've mentioned his name. Ryan Suter, young, forceful, hits hard, good shot from the point. Or, on the other side, a guy like Robin Regier from the Calgary Flames
mm-hmm.
can play in a kill situation. He can log over 20 minutes. He can shut down a guy, a top guy on the other team, and just be a general pain in your ass. A Douglas Murray, but with better skills.
Right. I would say Matthias Olland.
Yeah.
Might be
a guy with
good offensive skill. We've talked about him probably not being able to come to the Sharks because the Sharks can't sign big free agents. But Matthias Olland is the kind of caliber of player. You know, he'd be a top defenseman on a team that's not very good. But you put him on a team with Nick Lidstrom and Brian Rafalski, and he's sitting number three. So
sure.
That's the kind of guy we're talking about.
Right. So you can pair him with Dan Boyle and have a very effective top two, or you could pair him with Vlasic.
Yeah.
I mean, he upgrades the general top four.
Yeah.
For sure. A player like Mike Komisarek would also definitely be the type of player that we're looking for here. But now we're shooting for the moon, things that just aren't going to happen. But these guys, I think they're going to be some players like this out there attainable through trade. Dude, I want to jump back to the first question real quick.
Okay.
With Mahalik and Chichu. Do you think it's possible that both these guys are going to get moved, or is it really just likely it's going to be one? Because I agree with the email. I think one of these guys, for sure, is not coming back. But both?
I think it's possible. With McGinn and some of the other guys we got, I think it's possible. And if they really like Staubitz that much, it could be Staubitz on the fourth line. You move McGinn to the second line, Staubitz is on the fourth line. I don't think, personally, I'm going to take the glass is half empty approach here and say, Mahalik's contract is untradeable. He's Daniel Briere of the Sharks, albeit to a much lesser extent. But Briere is untradeable, $8 million and injury prone. Mahalik, I believe, is untradeable. He's making way too much money for the kind of role he is. He's never been a breakout player in the playoffs. And I don't know why teams would want to take a flyer on a long-term $4 million plus contract in a cap situation where the cap may actually go down the next 2 years. I think that contract is close to untradeable. If I had to say one of those guys going, I'd say it's Cheech just because it's more likely. Not because he should or shouldn't.
But Cheech's production has gone down so dramatically.
Precipitously. Yes.
What?
You know, one of those $2 words, sorry.
Dude. Sorry, come on now. This is Dudes on Hockey.
Dude, I thought you were like a fine arts major or something, weren't you?
No, come on now. Now we're getting personal.
All right, sorry.
57 points, and Mahalik had 57 points, 55 points. He had 66 points in 2006, 2007. I mean, guys like that are getting in the $4 million range as unrestricted free agents. He's young. I mean, he's only going to be 25. I mean, he's a former number six overall pick. Don't you think he's got more value than that? Could you get a first-round pick for him, dude?
Maybe.
A late first-round pick.
I think so.
Okay. Think so.
Well, dude, I got a special treat for you. I got trivia questions that I'm going to give to you.
Okay.
Then, and for our listeners to mull over as they listen to the Mark Purdy interview, and then we'll answer them when we come back.
Okay.
Okay, so here's the first question.
Thank you.
Which two NHL arenas are closest to each other? That's the first question. This is weird. You know, weird. I was talking to some other guy and we came with these questions. Second, which team is the furthest away from all other teams, where the shortest distance to the closest NHL team is the furthest? So there's your two questions. Think about them. Here's Mark Purdy.
Dude.
All right, we have here Mark Purdy, columnist for the San Jose Mercury News and often Sharks columnist. And thanks for coming on the podcast, Mark.
No worries. If a radio show is desperate enough to have me, I'm always amenable to visit.
Yeah, well, how relieved are you that this
is... I always like talking hockey. I write about a lot of different things, but I really enjoy actually going to hockey games and writing about them. It's a tough sport to write. Just because things happen so fast and, particularly in the playoffs, all the night games. But, if you want to shoot tigers and make it easy, you go to the zoo, right? So I enjoy writing about hockey.
Are you relieved this isn't a Warriors podcast?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. The only thing that would be worse is if it were a synchronized swimming podcast.
I guess we won't have you on as a guest next week then.
No, okay.
Hey, Mark, we want to talk about first your article that you wrote last week about the potential Sharks roster turnover, which we've been speculating a lot about for the last couple weeks. And you mentioned that you gathered, talking to Doug Wilson, that Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski are coming back for sure, and maybe Patrick Marleau might be destined for a new team. Are there any other roster moves you gleaned from Doug in that conversation, or anything you just want to generally speculate about?
Well, I'll be happy to speculate. I mean, I always say I know just enough about hockey to make me dangerous. But on the other hand, as we all know, San Jose is one of the original 22, so we can be as sophisticated as we want.
That's an important milestone.
The column you're talking about was generated. I appeared on a television show with Doug last week, and I was talking to him off camera. And it mentioned something about, it's too bad you don't have a number one pick this year. And he said, well, yet. And I said, really? And he says, and he just kind of raised his eyebrows. And so that told me he is making calls, and he's looking, and what do you have to trade to get a number one pick, right? Probably pretty good veteran, maybe a veteran with, a year or so left on his contract. And then what occurred was on the show, I was asking Doug, he had all these meetings with players before they left for the summer, and I said, what were you looking to hear in those meetings that to make you think you want to keep a guy or let a guy go? And he said, well, you don't want to hear any transference of blame. You want to, you want to hear, I needed to do better, I needed to do this. And for example, Joe Thornton, he is still really upset about this. He's thinking about it every day. That's the kind of guy you want. I said, okay, well, that's one guy you're bringing back. And then he said something similar about Pavelski. I said, well, that's two. And I said, you want to talk about anybody else? He goes, oh, I don't want to talk about anybody else. Well, I personally think it'd be tough for Patrick Marleau to come back, particularly as captain next year. And he has one more year, I believe, left on his deal. And while he does have the right to approve a trade, what I would see happening is maybe that he would be dealt to a team that would extend the contract. I have no inside knowledge at all that those discussions are happening, but I'm guessing they are. In terms of other guys, you guys watch the playoffs along with everybody else. I mean, Milan Mihalik is somebody making a lot of money and has been pretty much of a playoff disappointment the last few years. Good guy. Wow, does he have skill. but that's a lot of money to pay somebody. And maybe he's a guy. I would think that, you know, whenever I mention his name, Doug just kind of, you know, is blank or doesn't really respond. So there would be another guy for sure.
He didn't actually roll his eyes when you mentioned his name.
I didn't say he rolled his eyes.
I didn't say you did. I'm just asking.
And then I kind of had a blank look, and, you know, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I've known Doug. I'm a really old guy. I covered the first day of Sharks training. I covered the first Sharks draft, the Pat Flynn draft. And so, if you remember, Doug showed up in September of that year in a trade. So I've known Doug since 91 on a professional basis. And as a person, you know, I think he's a really good guy, and puts on his professional hat, and we have, you know, professional discussions. And, I've gotten to read him pretty well over the years, and I would say Mihalik is a good. I know Doug is on the phone talking to people about trades before the draft, and I would bet a lot of money that Mihalik's name is one of the names being mentioned.
Well, that sort of goes on to our next question, which is, you mentioned you've known Doug Wilson for quite a while. I was wondering if you could maybe compare and contrast how he is with you, with the media, and how you think he is as a general manager compared to our previous general manager, Dean Lombardi.
Oh, well, you know, Doug, just as a person, his personality is a lot more open than Dean. I thought Dean Lombardi worked really hard, but he was not a great communicator with the media. And I think you have to do that in this business, because really, when you're communicating with the media, to me, you're communicating with the fans. And I tried never to be personally insulting to Dean, but, you know, when you would, you know, the day Dean would make a trade that looked like a good trade, or draft, you know, drafted Marlowe, you'd say, well, this should be good, huh? And Dean would, like, look at you and go, you know, just do this big sigh. You know, how do you quote that, right? And I remember the first Sharks playoff run there before Game 7 in Detroit, the famous Jamie Baker game. I was in the press box with Dean, and, you know, pretty exciting moment for the franchise. And I was talking to Dean. I said, well, this is really, you know, pretty good deal, huh? And Dean, like, shakes his head and goes, like, oh, they're so excited in San Jose. This was at Joe Louis Arena we were talking. They're so excited back in San Jose. But, you know, that excitement could totally flip the other direction, 180 degrees, and they could be really, you know, upset too. You know? And
so real glass half full kind of guy is what you're saying.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's kind of the point of being fans, though, right? I mean,
sure.
Dean just, I think Doug gets the fans more than Dean does, and I think Doug, you know, understands the kind of image you have to, I guess, present to, from the franchise to the community. I know some people get frustrated because he is very smooth and sometimes he doesn't seem to say a lot, but, I can tell you, dealing with him with the media, he's never lied to me. I guess I can't say Lombardi lied to me either, but it was really hard to get Dean to open up about certain stuff, and Doug will do that.
So speaking of Doug Wilson and Greg Jamieson and our coach Todd McClellan, we were at State of the Sharks. We saw a good portion of the crowd there give a standing ovation to the four players. They walked out, but they just crushed our cup hopes and dreams, and everyone's standing up and cheering for them. Do you think that Sharks fans and the media just kind of in general gives this team a pass? And do you think that that helps or hurts the franchise?
Well, I think, you know, I wonder about that. I do wonder about that. And I asked Greg Jamieson that question. And, of course, what's he going to say? You know, we love our fans. Of course they love their fans. And because the fans do exactly what you said in terms of, you know, they give the team, give these four guys that show up at the State of the Sharks thing a standing ovation. I was there. I just kind of crawled in the upper deck to sit and watch the show. And I wasn't there to ask any questions. And that surprised me. It didn't surprise me they applaud the guys. It was nice of them to show up and answer questions. But the standing ovation, I mean, at the same time, I am always really careful about telling fans who pay a lot of money to watch these games here's how you should behave. They pay their money. They should behave the way they want to behave. I can more answer directly your question about the media. Gee whiz, you know, from, you know, I've had several players confront me over the years with, you know, things I've written that they weren't especially happy about. I think I'm fair, but I think I call guys out when necessary. I think what happens to hockey in general, and certainly in the Bay Area, is when the team is bad, there are so many other sports going on in the Bay Area. Most columnists will just go find something else to write about. They don't dwell on the Sharks doing bad. They just go find somebody else who's doing something more interesting. And I also think in the Bay Area there aren't a lot of columnists who are as interested in hockey as I am, and consequently don't write about it as much. But I could go back. I mean, I don't think you need to call guys horrible names to criticize them. But I feel I'm tough. Try to be tough but fair. If that makes me a wimp, so be it. But, I remember, for several games after the famous Timo Solani wraparound goal that never happened against Colorado.
Oh,
yeah, I was referring to him as Team Miss Solani for the next several columns I wrote about him. And he finally came up to me and said, gave me that eyebrow. And I said, okay, I guess I can maybe stop doing that now. I'd done it enough probably, but then he left anyway. But I remember one time in Japan, the Sharks were in Japan. If you remember the season they opened against Calgary, two games in Japan, sitting in maybe the only Irish bar in Tokyo, and in walks Joe Murphy, who was then with the team, with a bunch of guys. Mike Rathje was with them. And I'm sitting in the bar with our beat writer, then Vic Chi. I'm sitting in a booth. And all of a sudden, Mike Rathje sits down next to me, and he sits real close next to me, and says, you got to stop writing that crap about me. And I said, okay, Mike, I always believe in talking to man to man about, whatever it is. What's the problem? What did I write? Well, that crap. And I said, well, Mike, I have two rules. One is I'm happy to talk man to man with somebody about anything I've written and look them in the eye and discuss it. The second requirement is you got to read it first. Have you read it? Or did somebody just tell you what I wrote? He said, well, I won't tell you who. He said, somebody in the organization told me you wrote this. I said, well, that's not exactly what I wrote, but if you go back and read what I write and you have a problem with it, you come back to me, and we'll talk about it. And he never did. Glove him because, that was a year he'd been delayed in signing and, he was holding out, and I thought he was not handling himself well. So I think I've been tough. I mean, it's kind of daunting to have a 6'5" defenseman sit next to you in a bar and say, stop writing that.
In a foreign land, no less.
It might only be worse
I survived.
To be a Rathje Semenov sandwich, that would be scary.
Yeah. Two big guys right there.
Yeah, really. And Mike and I got along okay professionally, I think. I think he'd tell you that. But, that's the kind of stuff that happens if you're trying to cover a team honestly. I tell those guys, we get paid the same no matter what you do. But, just don't make me keep writing the same story over and over again in the playoffs. And once again, they maybe write the same story.
That's right. Just try it out again. Actually, I did have a question about that. He said, Mike Rathje, who do you think would be your most interesting or best interview in the history of the Sharks franchise? Player, front office, management, whatever.
Oh, wow. Remember when Al Iafredi was here for a
little
bit?
Sure, the planet.
Oh, yeah.
The planet. And, he was having back problems and everybody knew it, but he came in and, in the games he played for the Sharks, he was good. You could see the guys back off when he'd bring the puck across the blue line. Well, so one time he's, the team's on the road and he's rehabbing his back here. And I go over to the arena to, interview him. And, I go and he says, yeah, just a minute. And he pulls out a cigarette and then lights it with, one of the blowtorch you use to sharpen your skate blades. He says, come on in here. And we go and we sit down in a room. And I said, a lot of people say, you know, if you don't, I don't know how your back is, but a lot of people say if you can't get your back together for this and can come back and play, the Sharks have no chance to make the playoffs. And I'm afraid he takes a big long drag and says, is there some question about that? he was a fun guy to talk to. But there have been a lot of them over the years, actually.
Hey, Mark, we want to thank you for coming on the podcast. We got one more question for you. It's that time of year with the off season and July 1st coming around, unrestricted free agency. But the Sharks always seem to come up empty on unrestricted free agency as far as a marquee free agent. Why won't a big-time free agent come to San Jose?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm sure what Doug would tell you is you take it case by case. You know, Scott Niedermeyer, San Jose finished second, you know, and it was because his brother played for the Ducks. Some other guys, I don't know. I mean, I think Doug prefers, all things being equal, to, you know, to make trades rather than sign free agents. I think that's just, but, you know, I mean, does Rob Blake count? That was pretty good, you know.
That's a good point.
I wouldn't rule out totally, but, you know, there was even a time, you know, when Gretzky was on the market that supposedly Gretzky, you know, that San Jose finished second for Gretzky when he went to the Rangers. But I don't know. I think that Doug, it's going to be real interesting to see. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, it depends. Remember, they're right up against the salary cap, so it depends on who gets moved out maybe before the draft or all that in a trade, perhaps. And I think we pretty well know Mike Greer's not coming back, and Claude Lemieux and some of those guys. So there'll be some money available. My hunch is Doug will want to deal in terms of trades rather than free agents, but I could be wrong. I have been before.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Mark Purdy, columnist for the San Jose Mercury News. We really appreciate the time you take.
Sure.
Come on, Dudes on Hockey.
I guess I call anytime. I'll think of probably three better stories after we're done here, but call another time if you want.
Well, save them up for us next time.
All right. I'll try to take
Thanks,
notes.
Mark.
Thanks a lot.
Sure. Be good.
There, that's my outro.
Nice, dude.
You like
that? We can never get too much of that song.
I know, it's awesome. Mark Purdy's good. He has some good stories.
Mark Purdy, quite a character, a little salty.
Yeah.
I like that. We hope to have him back on again. So, Mark, thank you very much for being a guest.
All right, dude, stop stalling. What's the answer to the trivia?
This is hard, dude. Okay, so I'm going to say the two arenas that are the closest to each other, the two teams.
Uh-huh.
Are the Rangers and the Devils.
Good, dude. You should know that because we went to basically both of them.
I think it's a trick question because I think a lot of people might say the Ducks and the Kings.
That's right. It is kind of tricky.
But, you know, LA is a vast wasteland.
Or even the Islanders and the Rangers.
But I've made that trip myself, and that really isn't that close.
It's like 15 miles to the New Rock and Madison Square Garden.
All right. Now, I'm not going to do as well on this one, I don't think.
A little tougher.
Oh, man.
It's pretty close, to be honest. It's not obvious.
I had two guesses.
Okay. Dude.
Dallas Stars
is an excellent guess, but it's incorrect. Very good. I'll give you one more guess.
The furthest away, like, from all teams.
From any other team. Any other team. Dallas is really, really close. I think it's either second or third, but it's close.
Vancouver
is also close.
Stop!
So the third guess, you'll have to get it then.
No. Calgary?
No.
Yeah, it's Calgary and Vancouver.
It's Colorado.
Really?
Colorado is in the middle of nowhere.
Interesting.
Actually, the closest team to Dallas is St. Louis, actually. And that's what makes it... And the closest team to Colorado is Dallas. So... It's actually Colorado. So there you go. Crazy trivia.
Thanks, dude. I got one out of two, which is much better than I usually do.
Not bad, dude.
So following up with step five here.
Yes.
Now, we've talked about Mahalik. We've talked about Chichu.
Yes.
We don't need to talk about Marlow. We've already talked about Marlow a lot.
We've beat that one to
death. We think, you know, it's possible he could be out there. You know, Mark Purdy talks about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Vlasic and Ehrhoff, dude. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they're being actively shopped?
No. No, I don't. Not at all. I think if Doug Wilson is smart, he's taking all offers seriously, but I don't think...
Which it sounds like he is.
Yes.
From what Mark Purdy said, and I think he's right. I think what Mark Purdy said is also very interesting. Doug Wilson prefers to improve his roster through trade.
That's right.
You're not just adding salary then. You're removing something from your roster and you're adding to it. So
I don't think those guys are being shopped. If someone's going to offer you something big for him, then I'm sure he'll listen, but I don't think he's going to go out and say, what are you going to give me for these guys? Because I think both those guys are fairly inexpensive. They're young. Those are the kinds of players you want on the roster.
But haven't you seen one too many errors out of Ehrhoff? He's been in, McClellan seemed in love with him at times and then hated him so much that he was watching from the press box at times.
Could be worse. We could have Michael Roosevelt paying him $5.5 million to make the same error.
That's true. But like in order for this team to go forward, I mean, is there a defenseman on the Detroit Red Wings that makes those sort of maddening mistakes?
No.
No.
But those guys are robots, I'm convinced. They're not actually human. They're evil, evil robots.
So you could see Vlasic developing into that type of steady player, but Ehrhoff is too freewheeling. I don't think he's ever going to be that guy. He clearly has value. He's very talented. So maybe it's time to shop around.
You know what I have on my list, which is going to seem like a minor player, but maybe the Sharks can take advantage of it? I have Ken Huskins on my list. He was on the list of Hockey News's like top free agents.
But he's not under contract.
I know, but you could trade him before the draft. We still
trade his rights?
Trade his rights before the draft. I'm not saying that this is going to be some like blockbuster deal. We're going to get LeCavalier straight up for Ken Huskins. But, you might be able to take advantage a little bit of that press. I mean, when I was reading that list on the Hockey News of the top free agents, Kent Huskins, I mean, he didn't play half the season. I mean, that is surprising to me. If I were a GM, I might try and take advantage of that little beneficial press. Maybe there's a little bit of seed planted into other GMs saying, hey, maybe this is the guy we should take a look at. Maybe Doug Wilson could take advantage of that. Maybe you can throw one over on new Joe Nieuwendyk over there in Dallas. Get him to give us something.
Joe Nieuwendyk now leading the Dallas Stars to the promised land.
We'll take Matt Niskanen for Ken Huskins. Thank you.
So if you want to toss in Trevor Daly, we'll listen. Yeah, we'll listen.
I'm listening.
Some odd moves this week, dude, to maybe kind of wrap things up. Joe Nieuwendyk, Brett Hull, who I think we talked about earlier in the year, the whole Avery shenanigans. Mm-hmm. I said it's just going to cost Brett Hull his job.
And it did.
And it should. He really screwed up. Now, that team was besieged by injuries, and Avery wasn't the only problem. But boy, I think he blew it. He blew it. He was in charge.
He made a real risky move, and he could have been, lauded as a savior of that team or taking the team to the next level. He really crapped out on that one, and it cost him. And Les Jackson is going back to player development or scouting or whatever job he held before. Obviously, he didn't impress Tom Hicks very much. And so now they brought in Joe Nieuwendyk, who does, when we first talked about this, I made a Garth Snow reference, but, that's not really an apt comparison because Joe Nieuwendyk has worked under the GM in two different organizations. I think
it's a little more of a Doug Wilson comparison.
Yeah, I think it is. I think you're right. And so say Joe Nieuwendyk is like Garth Snow, for instance, where you just basically pick him from the bench, slap a suit on him and throw him into an office and say, you're the GM. That's not what Dallas is doing here. They're taking a guy who has a history with the club, who has manager experience, not as a general manager, but certainly in that office and as in that capacity, understanding what GMs do. No one knows how good he's going to be as a GM, but I don't think it's a dumb move by the Stars.
What about Jacques Martin as the new head coach of the Canadiens?
Well, the thing is, les habitants have a different set of requirements for a coach than most teams do. I mean, the guy has to be bilingual. He has to speak French. Pretty much he's got they have all these extra constraints that other teams don't have, and Jacques Martin fits most of those constraints.
So does Gerard Depardieu.
Does he?
Does he?
He coached my peewee team, Gerard Depardieu.
Dude, God, the Canadians are...
It's an uninspired choice, that's what I would say. It's uninspired. Yikes.
he gets a get out of jail free card. He's not even going to be around to take the blame for the whole Bomeister mess.
That's true.
So
that's actually a pretty good move by him.
Yeah. Hey. Oh, I'm getting out of here before it truly hits the fan in Florida.
The house completely burns down.
We'll see what they do. You know, there's been rumblings that Jacques Lemaire is going to go and coach in Florida.
We'll see. Who knows?
The old people love boring stuff.
I guess so.
In Florida. Way to go.
All right, dude. That does it for this week's Dudes on Hockey. I hope you'll listen to us again next week. You can check our blog out at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday. Same time, same place.
I hate the Red Wings.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.